Mr. Chairman, are you ready to begin the hearing again?
Yes, we are. Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize the presence of Representative Sandra Major, who's, Representative, her district includes the northern tier counties of Susquehanna, Wayne, Wyoming, right in the middle of a huge part of this Marcellus Shale play in Pennsylvania. Welcome to our hearings. I noticed also that we had staff here from Senator Scarnati's office and Senator Tomlinson's office and Representative Godshall's office. So we're always happy to have our legislator and legislative friends here with us. Judge Kuchiris, do I understand that the Wyoming County landowners are going to testify?
Yes. I was just about to introduce Mr. Wilson from the Wyoming County Landowners Incorporated.
As a courtesy to Representative Major, let's hear from you first, Mr. Wilson, if we may.
Thank you, Chairman Colley and Vice Chairman Christie and Commissioners Gardner and Paulson for the opportunity to present a little bit different take on the development of the pipelines. I represent on behalf of 1,200 members of the Wyoming County landowners. It's a coalition of property owners that's in the heart of the concentrated Marcellus development. Listening to the testimony so far, one gets an overriding impression that the pipeline companies think it would be fine if the PUC would take over the regulation inspection of intrastate and gathering systems in Pennsylvania, but that oversight should follow CFR 49, Part 192 exclusively. Statements were made that gathering pipelines are sufficiently addressed in 192. While 192 regulations may satisfy the desires of the midstream pipeline companies, we property owners see them as creating an atmosphere of the fox watching the hen house. If you're in their position, what's not to like? 192.1 sub B 4.2 says, this part does not apply to onshore gathering of gas through pipeline that is not a regulated onshore gathering line, as determined in 192.8. Class 1, 10 or fewer dwelling units per mile within 220 yards of the pipeline are not regulated pipelines and thus are virtually exempted from 192 regulations. I don't have all the company plans, but I'll wager that more than 90% of the gathering systems will be in Class 1 locations. I can only surmise why FERC and PHMSA and OPS did not provide more stringent requirements. The report Transmission Pipelines and Land Use, a Risk-Informed Approach, Special Report 281 in 2004 by the Transportation Research Board, sponsored by OPS, provides some insights as it assesses risk to overall populations and when it addresses jurisdictional authority and restrictions. What I do know is that odorization of gas passing through our lands and gathering lines is not required. Even gas passing through more densely populated areas is not required to be odorized if then it passes through rural areas for over half its length. I know that type A regulated onshore gathering lines and unregulated gathering lines may be of equal diameter and pressure to interstate transmission lines, but are specifically exempted from CFR 49 subpart O, Integrity Management Program Participation, substantial parts of subpart N, qualification of pipeline personnel, and 192.150, passage of internal inspection devices. Unfortunately, without countless hours of research, most property owners don't know these facts and sign right-of-way / easement agreements presented by contract landmen that make uneducated or misleading statements punctuated by half-truths. I was asked by one of our group members to be present when a landman presented an easement agreement. During the presentation, the landman stated that there was no danger of explosion because there was no oxygen in the pipeline. Either he's in the wrong business and should be an actor, or he was misinformed. because the expression on his face was shock when I showed him pictures of an explosion caused by corrosion that destroyed and damaged several homes and left an area over 1,000 feet in diameter scorched near Appomattox, Virginia. Later, as he continued the presentation, I told him to stop because he was telling the property owner that the FERC required corrosion inspection on these lines. When corrected, he said that he usually worked for interstate transmission lines, and that is where he'd gotten all his experience. On another occasion, I was told by a company representative that odorizing gas didn't necessarily provide a higher level of protection, and then was shown a slide that attempted to reinforce that statement by equating the incident rates on gathering, transmission, and delivery systems. I'm sure he knew the other factors were involved, such as the fact that CFR 49191.1 says the reporting of incident safety-related conditions, annual pipeline summary data by operators of gas line facilities. Part B, this does not apply to onshore gathering of gas outside the following areas: incorporated or unincorporated cities, towns, and villages, or other commercial areas of subdivisions, businesses, shopping centers, and the like. Also, distribution systems, by the very nature of the areas and markets that they serve, are much more prone to damage. In meeting with a higher level company representative, he volunteered that he had 35 years' experience in the pipeline business. Commissioners, that's part of the problem. This gentleman has 35 years and a multi-million dollar company's engineering, operations, legal, and administrative departments designing and negotiating easement agreements that are, in all reality, option agreements with landowners who, if they happen to be looking out the window, have maybe 35 seconds to formulate questions should they happen to see a company logo on the side of the car. While we realize that it's incumbent upon property owners to do his, her, their homework and seek professional counsel, many, due to time or financial constraints, cannot or will not do so. Instead, they rely on the state to have regulations in place and inspections to ensure compliance with those regulations. For those that do their due diligence, only to discover that they will only receive the protections that they negotiate in an agreement, the task may not be worth the effort and expense. When they find that the PUC doesn't regulate or inspect, and the DEP and DCNR have only cursory regulations pertaining to pipelines and limited technical staff to back them up, many landowners are reluctant to sign grant easement agreements. Notwithstanding the reluctance, some property owners have or will sign easements because they're told and believe that if they do so, it will facilitate the drilling and the resulting royalty stream. Due to the lack of sufficient regulation pertinent to pipelines in Pennsylvania, such as proper right-of-way widths, right-of-way reclamation, pipeline abandonment, setback restrictions, and the associated liability based on potential impact areas, noise pollution from associated facilities, restrictions on eminent domain, odorizing gas, training, reporting, record keeping, and operational auditing, groups such as ours have attempted to gather and disseminate information from other sections of the country that have had to address these issues on a state and local level. All these groups have tried to do is to level the playing field by approaching the use of our lands in a businesslike manner. For our own selfish reasons, we want and need these companies to succeed. Without the infrastructure that they will create, there will be no royalty stream. However, the property owners who will be most affected by these gathering networks have accumulated and maintained their lands by being good stewards of it. We are not willing to sacrifice that stewardship for the safety or the safety and well-being of our families, friends, and communities. We implore the Commission to implement regulations that require odorizing of gas, full reporting of incidents, inspection of records and pipeline facilities, and the training and qualification of personnel. We further encourage the legislature to provide for adequate funding of the increased staffing that will be required to provide these safeguards. Texas has 28 inspectors that conducted 2,500 inspections in a year. By contrast, the PUC has 8 inspectors. As far as the reports in Texas during a couple-year period, there were 132 incident reports filed with Texas Railroad Commission. Of those, 38 went to PHMSA, or the Office of Pipeline Safety. Again, thank you for your opportunity that you provided for our input, and be assured that we're willing to cooperate with the commission in any way that we can as it considers the matter further. Also, I'd like to take a second to give a special thanks to Paul Metro. Paul's been a world help to us of what we've tried to learn here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We think pretty highly of him, too. Thank you. Although we're going to create an awful big head here if we're not careful.
We'll bring him down lightly.
Mr. Chairman, our next witness will be Christopher Zona on behalf of DTE Pipeline Company and Bluestone Pipeline Company of Pennsylvania.
Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, Commissioners, thank you for this opportunity to speak in front of you today. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better? My name is Christopher Zona. I'm the Director of Business Development for DTE Pipeline and Bluestone Gathering, Bluestone Pipeline Company of Pennsylvania. First of all, I'd just like to applaud the Commission for holding this en banc hearing and soliciting input from all interested parties who are interested in the development of Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania and the potential impact on the Commission. I believe these actions by the Commission send a strong signal to existing proposed gathering companies of the Commission's intent to establish a fair and consistent framework at the outset, and thereby allowing all gathering companies to establish business plans based upon a known regulatory scheme. A little bit about DTE. DTE is a wholly owned affiliate company, or DTE Pipeline Company is a wholly owned affiliate of DTE Energy, which is a diversified energy business in Michigan. We've been in the gas business for a little over 100 years. We also have electric and nuclear trading, as well as interstate and intrastate and gathering expertise. DTE Pipeline Company manages and owns partnership interests in several interstate natural gas pipelines, namely Invector Pipeline and nearby here in the Northeast, and Millennium Pipeline. In addition, DTE and its affiliates have built and operated more than 2,600 miles of transmission pipeline in Michigan, as well as 840 miles of gathering system since the 1970s, connecting to more than 6,000 production wells over the course of our history so far. These gathering services provided by DTE's affiliates are subject to the regulatory jurisdiction of the Michigan Public Service Commission. Bluestone Pipeline Company of Pennsylvania is a recently formed wholly owned subsidiary of DTE Pipeline, and was formed for the purpose of constructing and operating a natural gas gathering system here in Pennsylvania, with the purpose of gathering and delivering these natural gas supplies to the Millennium Pipeline in Broome County, New York. Unlike gathering systems built for sole private use, Bluestone intends to contractually subscribe its capacity to third-party producers through a combination of individual negotiation and or awards via public open season. Back in April of 2010, DTE and Bluestone filed comments in this proceeding to respond to certain questions posed by the Commission. In those comments, DTE and Bluestone recommended that the Commission adopt safety regulations for Pennsylvania jurisdictional gathering company operations. However, DTE and Bluestone, much like some of the other companies and representatives who spoke earlier today, commented that the Commission's regulation of rates is unwarranted given the availability of competitive alternatives to third-party producers, the commercial flexibility required to meet the needs of producers in various and differing stages of production maturity, and the fact that Bluestone, much like a number of other gathering companies, will bear 100% of the risk of return for investment in this region and for capacity renewals. As there is in it proposed in within our testimony, there will be no mechanism to assure recovery of its cost of service or its investment. DTE and Bluestone further recommend that the Commission should not regulate siting of gathering pipelines, given the large success of siting and construction of natural gas pipelines in Pennsylvania to date without existing siting regulation. In addition to those comments, I offer several other comments here on Commission's regulation of gathering systems. First of all, DTE and Bluestone strongly support Commission regulation of the safety of jurisdictional gathering and transportation facilities. I noted that DTE's affiliates provide substantial gathering and transportation services in Michigan that are subject currently to the jurisdiction and safety regulation of the Michigan Public Service Commission. The adoption and implementation of safety regulations, which in part include or encompass 49 CFR 192, in addition to additional regulations that the MPSC has imposed upon regulators or upon operators in within Michigan based upon experience, for instance, dealing with gas, for example, that would have high hydrogen sulfide content, for instance, there would be additional regulations imposed upon that. The adoption and implementation of these regulations has proven that Commission regulation provides a consistent framework and ensures that gathering facilities provide their service in a safe and reliable manner, while neither stifling the growth of regional production nor the realization of the associated benefits to the Commonwealth. To the extent that the Commission adopts and implements safety regulations and requirements applicable to gathering systems, Bluestone commits to operate its facilities in a manner that will meet or exceed safety requirements or regulations. Furthermore, Bluestone will commit to participate in the Pennsylvania One Call program. DTE believes that it is in the interest of all entities participating in the development of Marcellus Shale that all gas facilities and operations be safe. As noted, I'm just going to just jump right into here. Before I talked a lot about here on our support of the safety, and I think that is an item that's been very well covered by the other participants, and again, which we completely agree with. But I will jump to one point here that I think has been somewhat talked about, and is for gathering companies like Bluestone who are looking to develop, invest, and operate in the infrastructure necessary to provide contractual gathering services to third-party producers and other shippers, a regulatory environment that is consistent with the risks of such investment is critical in fostering development of Marcellus Shale production. As exemplified in DTE's history of development, Bluestone will make every reasonable effort to work with landowners and local authorities and municipalities in the development of such infrastructure to reduce any potential impact to the environment or other use of lands, and generally to be a good neighbor in the communities where we have assets and where we conduct our business. At the same time, gathering transportation companies providing a service to the public, that is to a third-party shippers, need to be able to rely on a consistent regulatory framework throughout the Commonwealth. Therefore, being treated as a public utility for this limited purpose will facilitate the rationale and efficient development of necessary infrastructure by providing an environment of regulatory certainty and consistency that is necessary to attract investment. Furthermore, it is important to note that there is significant benefit to the public from Commission treatment of gathering companies as public utilities for these limited purposes. Namely, as a public agency focused on the overall benefit to the Commonwealth, the Commission and its processes afford its constituents a non-biased venue to ensure that these concerns and needs have a voice in the determination of public necessity. Additionally, the Commission provides a third-party alternative for its constituents to identify any concern of safety or unsafe operating practice on an ongoing basis. For these reasons, as well as those previously set forth in the comments that we filed earlier, I do not believe that it is necessary for the Commission to regulate rates for gathering systems or to regulate the siting of gathering pipelines. However, we do believe it is appropriate for the Commission to adopt safety regulations for Pennsylvania jurisdictional gathering and transportation company operations and facilities. Further, I believe that it is appropriate for gathering systems that intend to hold themselves out to the public to apply for certificates of public convenience in order to facilitate the development of the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania. This concludes my comments, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, our next witness is Deborah Goldberg on behalf of Earth Justice.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for the opportunity to address the Commission today. My name is Deborah Goldberg. I'm the managing attorney at the Northeast Office of Earth Justice, which is the nation's largest nonprofit environmental law firm. I'm here speaking on behalf of 20 organizations and several unaffiliated individuals who are working in Pennsylvania to protect their health and the environment from the potentially adverse impacts of inadequately controlled gas rush. They are farmers, anglers, and other citizens who understand that long-term prosperity in this Commonwealth requires careful stewardship of the clean water, air, and soil that support agriculture and recreation, two sustainable industries that represent the core of Pennsylvania's economy. All of us greatly appreciate this commission's forward-looking approach to its jurisdictional duties. Unfortunately, not every agency has had the forethought to consider the issues that intensive gas development will present before major problems arise. We are not here to advocate for the creation of a vast new regulatory empire, but we do hope that the Commission will vigorously promote its stated mission to protect the public interest and to foster new technologies and competitive markets in an environmentally sound manner. The Commission has affirmed in prior proceedings that it takes its environmental obligations seriously, and the Chair specifically raised at the last hearing some concerns about the impacts of gas waste on water utilities, even though there are other agencies principally charged with environmental protection. We encourage the Commission to coordinate its activities closely with those agencies with overlapping jurisdictions to ensure that serious problems do not fall through bureaucratic cracks. I have submitted my written testimony, and obviously I'm not going to read through it. I have three principal points that I'd like to make today. The first concerns the safety of pipelines. Again, I would urge the Commission not to hesitate to exercise its full current authority over the safety of gas pipelines and to seek additional legislative authority to oversee all pipelines, including those gathering lines in Class 1 areas. I think this may be one area where most of the industry, the landowners groups, and the environmental groups can come together to support the request for legislative authority for greater safety in, regulation by the Commission. As you know, other states have safety regulations that are more protective than Pennsylvania's, and the gas industry is still active and profitable in those regions. The industry is resisting such oversight here, but Pennsylvania should learn from those states, which have long histories of intensive gas development and have come to appreciate the need for public safety regulation over pipelines of every sort in every location. The Commission should examine closely the models offered by Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas, but it should regulate Pennsylvania consistently with the Commonwealth's unique needs, taking into consideration the presence of major population centers, agricultural areas, recreational resources, and the ecosystem services provided by intact forests and clean streams in the Marcellus region. I'd also like to address the impacts of pipelines on other public utilities regulated by this commission. The commission cannot fulfill its mission or even achieve the objectives of this hearing if it considers the potential pipeline regulation in isolation from the impacts of gas development on the full range of public utilities within PUC jurisdiction. There are two principal public utilities in which I'd like to focus. Water utilities already have felt the impact of inadequate control over gas waste disposal, as the Chair recognized at the last hearing. The construction and maintenance of thousands of miles of new pipelines and roads will increase the risk of sedimentation that also will raise treatment costs for water utilities. The Commission should ensure that the gas industry, and not the water utilities, and not the ratepayers, including business ratepayers, shoulder those additional costs. Protecting water utilities and ratepayers also may require Commission oversight of other regulated utilities, such as sewage treatment plants that upgrade to treat gas wastes, and the facilities that accept the residuals from those treatment facilities for disposal. Motor carriers, as the Chair indicated at the last hearing, should not be transporting gas development materials and equipment without Commission certification. If the heavy trucks traveling rural roads, especially in hilly areas, do not carry sufficient accident insurance, the industry will once again shift the costs of its business onto innocent victims and Pennsylvania's taxpayers. The Commission should require that the industry certify its use of regulated carriers and ensure that the industry pays adequate fees to cover the costs of vigilant enforcement by the Bureau of Transportation and Safety. which currently has fewer than 30 employees to monitor compliance in the entire state. Finally, I'd like to address the question of siting. The location of pipelines is not neutral with respect to the Commission's jurisdictional concerns. Poorly situated pipelines raise preventable threats to persons and property, to clean streams, and to the forests that protect water supplies. Failure to oversee siting virtually guarantees that pipelines will proliferate dangerously, preventing unnecessary redundancy and unnecessary risk, may not require the development of exclusive territories or a rate-making structure, which the industry strenuously opposes. But it does require coordination, and coordination will not happen without Commission involvement. Any streamlined regulation that the Commission contemplates must include siting oversight. Owners and operators of interstate gathering and transmission lines should not be deemed public utilities. But if they seek a certificate of public convenience, they should not obtain the benefits of gas utility status without submitting to siting oversight by the Commission as a formal condition of certification. It would be an outrage to permit gas pipeline owners to seize property from unwilling landowners without first proving the need for both the extent and the specific location of the pipeline. Moreover, the Commission should ensure that no certificate of public convenience is granted and no seizure proceeds without at least 30 days' notice to affected landowners and the public, with an opportunity to comment and a public hearing. We realize that the issues that we have raised, especially the siting issues, raise jurisdictional issues not only for the Commission, but also for other state agencies, including DEP, DCNR, and the Fish and Boat Commission, at the very least. We urge the Commission to consider creating a joint task force or some other body to examine options and to offer recommendations for a comprehensive planning process, much like the comprehensive planning process for economic development that was suggested, that will address the overlapping missions of these multiple governmental bodies. Ideally, that task force would develop public participation procedures that would offer it the benefit of input from a wide spectrum of stakeholders, including scientific experts, local governments, industry, landowners, environmental and consumer organizations, and other concerned citizens. Finally, I would like to reiterate what I said at the outset. The Commission need not build a dynasty, but it should not shy from exercising its rightful authority or from seeking additional legislative authority when its mission so demands. The Commission should not be cowed by industry threats to leave or predictions of economic doom, which we hear every time that a state seeks to protect its citizens from overreaching gas development. The gas is not going anywhere, and the industry will go where the gas is, as it has done elsewhere in the nation. We fully appreciate the need for jobs and for economic growth, but we should not sacrifice sustainable and broad-based prosperity that we can bequeath to generations to come for the sake of short-term profit or get-rich-quick schemes. We commend the Commission for taking seriously its stated mission, including its commitment to promote the Commonwealth's economy in an environmentally sound manner, and we look forward to working with you to ensure that any Marcellus Shale development proceeds consistently with the public interest. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Our last speaker is Mr. Gregory Brasidas of the ETC Northeast Pipeline LLC.
Chairman Qualley, Vice Chairman Christie, Commissioners, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Greg Brasidas. I am Vice President of Government and State Affairs for Energy Transfer Partners, LP, which owns ETC Northeast Pipeline. That's our subsidiary up here in the Northeast. And we own other subsidiaries as well. Energy Transfer Partners, LP, is a publicly traded partnership owning and operating a diversified portfolio of energy assets ETP has pipeline operations in Arizona, Colorado, Louisiana, New Mexico, and Utah, and we claim to own the largest intrastate pipeline system in Texas. ETP currently has natural gas operations that include 17,500 miles of gathering and transportation pipelines, treating and processing assets, and three natural gas storage facilities. We're also one of the largest retail marketers of propane in the United States. We serve over 1 million customers in our propane business. I also like to point out that while my current responsibilities are government affairs, I spent over 30 years as an engineer and as a business commercial developer for the pipeline business, and I'm happy to share that experience with you today, and hopefully it's a little more insightful and a little more knowledgeable than the individual that Mr. Wilson described in his testimony, with 30 years of experience and not really knowing how the pipeline system works. We have previously submitted ETC Northeast Pipeline, that is, a detailed response to the Commission's questions. I'd just like to highlight some of the major points of that response today. Regarding utility regulations, we join a lot of our colleagues today in saying that while we provide gathering services for natural gas producers, that service includes compression, treating, and processing services. We're not a producer, nor do we plan to provide burn-a-tip service. We typically receive natural gas into our gathering systems from the producers at the wellhead or at a central point for delivery from several wells, and deliver the gas into the intrastate or interstate transmission pipelines. The producer typically retains the title to the gas and contracts with the intrastate or interstate pipeline for transportation downstream of our gathering facilities. Although ETCE does not now intend to take title of the gas, it is not unusual for gatherers to purchase gas from the producers at the receipt points into the gathering system. An example of that would be we purchased their gas for fuel for our compressors. It also is not unusual for a third party, a marketer, for example, to purchase gas from the producer at the wellhead and to contract with Energy Transfer for gathering services in lieu of the producer. ETC gathering systems do not provide service to end-use customers, but rather are designed to gather gas from natural gas wells and deliver the gas to the intrastate or interstate pipeline system exclusively. I was fortunate to be in the audience at the first session, and it's apparent to me from the statements from you, yourselves, as well as from the stakeholders testifying, that all recognize the potential benefits to Pennsylvania, for the development of Pennsylvania shale gas. It is important to note that gathering and related services are critical to the development of Pennsylvania shale gas. If the Commission regulates gatherers, ETC believes that the goal of fostering shale gas development, and thus the public interest, will be better served if the Commission were to undertake streamlined regulation of competing gathering and processing services, not unlike what was done for competitive access providers. Specifically, the Commission should not regulate entry, siting, rates, service or terms, and conditions of service. Similarly, the Commission should not require affiliated interest filings, security certificates, annual reports, or similar requirements under the Public Utility Code and regulations intended for traditional retail end-user utility services. ETC suggests that a light-handed regulation of gathering and processing be done. As a starting point, the light-handed regulation should amount to a checklist as the one for competitive access providers under the Commission's streamlined application and regulation regime established in docket number M00960799. Given the critical role played by gatherers in the Marcellus development, ETC submits that gatherers should be required to establish the expertise and the financial wherewithal to serve as such in Pennsylvania, and should be granted eminent domain and right-of-way occupancy powers commonly provided under Pennsylvania law to public utilities, but that gatherers should not be burdened by full-scale economic regulation as occurred with burn-a-tip service. Regarding safety, it's been clearly addressed here today, but natural gas, I would like to point out, compared to some other fuels, is very efficient, it's nice and clean burning, but to be sure, it's a hazardous material. The nature of this hazard has been witnessed by us all in dramatic footage that periodically graces our television screens on the 6 o'clock news. Every stakeholder and neighbor is a loser in such events. So it is in the best interest of all that safety be given a first priority. As such, ETCE fully supports the use of the requirements of the aforementioned 49 CFR 192 as administered by the Department of Transportation and the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. To implement the Part 192 regulations, the legislature could adopt a new law or amend the definition of public utility found in the Public Utility Code Section 102, to include gathering, compression, treating, and or processing services provided to producers. The new law or amendment should explicitly state that other than registration for entry, conferring public utility status, or a certificate of public convenience, the Commission shall only regulate such services for safety by enforcing the U.S. DOT regulations and calculate and charge assessments based upon pipeline mileage. Regarding assessments, we would agree that after deducting any compensation provided by the federal government for enforcing the DOT regulations, the Commission should recover from its reasonable expenses associated with ensuring such safety from each gatherer on a per-mile basis. And with that, I'd like to conclude. I appreciate the opportunity and be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, we are now at that question section for the commissioners.
Batting order, huh?
Same batting order. Vice Chairman Christie.
Bill, thank you for your comments. It's good to hear from landowners. Is it your position that the PUC should seek jurisdiction, safety jurisdiction, over all classes of pipelines, including Class 1, given your experience with your landowners?
Well, right now, by and large, the landowners, just generally speaking, I don't think have a clue as to the fact that there is no safety regulation of one of Class 1. I'd virtually say all that you walk out and talk to, if you're in different sections of the state, have no idea that there's four different classes even, and let alone what that is. The folks that we're dealing with in this group, and I've been asked to come talk to different groups besides ours, think that one, there's a lot of fear that something could happen without them having any idea. Class 1 locations, as you know, there's very little regulation. And consequently, people are afraid that there'll be a leak, that they won't know about it. People are afraid that when these lines are put through their property, that they don't want to have their kids be or their grandchildren be acceptable collateral damage, if you will, if there's a problem. I read through that whole 113-page risk assessment that was done for the ops safety office, and there are several reasons that they took the risk-informed approach that they did. It wasn't that that they didn't feel like there was some kind of acceptable damage, but because of their jurisdictional authority and how it was set up and setting setback restrictions and things like that, that they couldn't approach it from that, because that got into local jurisdiction. Consequently, they took the risk-informed approach, and that leaves out one Class 1 areas. So we do think that there should be some more inspection criteria, at the very least incident reporting criteria. And you don't know there's a problem because, as I said, 191 specifically exempts them from having to report. So to say that, oh, it's so much safer in the gathering systems than it is in the transportation, you know, the transmission systems, is just a disingenuous statement.
But what I find kind of disturbing is, and I think my colleagues would share my same sentiment of having zero tolerance for landmen issuing misleading statements to landowners and information that's not accurate.
But and, you have to realize some of these landmen were selling cars. I had a landman call me up, and the phone number that flashed on my caller ID was Wheels and Deals.
And I think The reality is people are being frozen right now in their decision-making process because they don't know what to expect with these new gas lines. And that's not good for anyone. It's not good for Pennsylvania economic development, and it's not good for the property owners that don't have the proper information to assess the risk and put a price tag on what they're willing to pay to have a pipeline underneath their property. And I think what I take from your comments is that we really got to get our act together and get standards out there that everybody knows what they are. And then I think we have a challenge here of getting the communication out to make sure that everybody understands the rules. And I think at the end of the day, that'll produce a better environment for everyone. A quick question for Christopher. In Michigan, can you describe how they handle the gathering systems?
Sure.
From a regulatory perspective?
Sure. In Michigan, you know, obviously the same federal code requirements, you know, where you have the exclusion for the Class 1. But typically in Michigan, what has developed in our region is that would be the pipeline or the small diameter pipelines that the producers will tie in a wellhead to a meter. Everything from the meter to the actual larger gathering main trunk lines, all of that would be underneath what we call in Michigan an Act 9 pipeline or underneath the MPSC jurisdiction and be subject to all regulations, even if it was a Class 1 pipeline. But again, those are usually larger diameter lines. And again, I would say probably also in Michigan, what we find is majority of pipelines that we have been installed for gathering do have public certificate associated with it, because a significant part in Michigan when the development of its regulations was to the elimination of waste. And that came in a couple forms, one being to ensure that these geological reservoirs were properly drained. So they impose a number of restrictions in terms of, for example, flow rates and how large the production units could be and what have you, to ensure that they would drain adequately all the reserves underneath a certain area. The second piece was also to regulate more of the environmental side of things. I mean, back in the 60s and 70s when this first started, there was not the environmental regulations that there are today. As a result, there was a large amount of waste in terms of timber, in terms of natural resources that was experienced. And as a result of that, these regulations were promulgated to ensure that going forward, those mistakes were not made. And that's currently the environment that we have had in Michigan for the last 30 years.
Thank you. A quick question for Greg. You seem to be one of the few entities that are proposing that we have the ability to provide the eminent domain powers. Can you maybe elaborate on that? Because I think you're one of the few folks that are recommending that.
It's a tool. Let me just start out by saying that it's a tool. And we as a company, with all the pipeline miles that we've built across the country, in places where we do have the right of eminent domain, Texas is where we have the great majority of our assets. We do qualify as a utility in Texas. We do have the right of eminent domain. But let me describe to you how we go about it. It's certainly an emotional matter. Land rights are involved. People's feelings and emotions are involved, and a lot of times those come to the surface. And the process that we use when we do use eminent domain, I think, is a reasonable man's process. We do approach the landowner. Hopefully we don't have a used car salesman as our agent, but rather someone that we have attempted to certify as a qualified agent that do know that have a knowledge, a working knowledge, a good hands-on knowledge, not only of how a pipeline works, but of what the laws are regarding the use of eminent domain. We require that our right-of-way agents identify the company that they're working for, that they give that landowner a contact that's in our management team, so that if they feel some inadequacy with the right-of-way agent, they have another voice that they can speak with immediately. We do require that our right-of-way agents speak at least three different calls to a landowner that is not initially agreeing with us on granting the rights of an easement for us to lay our pipeline. So we go through a process, and if we do, by chance, not seem to reach an agreement with that landowner, what we do is we back up and take a look at the route that we have selected. Before we've even started this process, we've attempted to sit down as much as we can with the route that we've selected, with the communities that we're going through, not necessarily to advise that we're going to specifically go down this, you know, very, very delineated GPS line, but in a region to say, we're coming through this way, we're going to start talking to your landowners. Do you have any objections to that? And we don't, that's not necessarily that we touch base with every single entity that's involved and where the pipeline is going to be, but we attempt to do a broad brush look to make sure that the route that we are selecting is something that would generally be acceptable to the community. So when we get to that landowner that has, for whatever his reasons are, not decided to work a settlement with us for the easement that we're seeking to get, we've gone through a process of selecting the route, which is certainly driven by economics, but it's also driven by where the rivers are, where the streams are, where the schools are, where the playgrounds are, to the best of our ability to try to avoid those things. It's a function of where the gas is and where the pipeline is that we're going to try to connect to, certainly in the shortest distance, but we try to route that system the best way we can. But when we do come to the landowner, we've had all of this pre-work done. Typically, when we're having an issue with the landowner, we have a lot of the tract of the pipeline already laid out. We have a lot of agreements with a lot of landowners who welcome us, by the way. They do receive compensation for the easements that we do provide. It is a source of wealth in the community. They do work with us in selecting the route, but we do come to a point sometimes where the eminent domain tool is a good tool to have. It just helps us to expedite the process. In places where we don't have it, I agree with the other testifiers today that we can work through those issues, but it's a tool, and I think if it's a tool that's used properly, it's used adequately, it's used with good oversight, the land commissioners or the local people through the district court that are appointed are typically landowners from the region. So this is not being done in isolation from the community. It's being done with individuals that have a stake in the game. So we view it as a fair process, and we view it as a tool that's very, very valuable. And we would ask the commission to give consideration to the business in Pennsylvania to have that with the light-handed regulation.
Thank you.
Commissioner Powelson.
Thank you, Chairman Cawley. Again, I want to thank the presenters for taking the time out to be with us here today on this important subject. And I want to first start off, Mr. Wilson and Ms. Goldberg, assure you that Pennsylvania, from the early days of the Industrial Revolution to where we are today, Pennsylvania, I think, is always with our industry. I mean, we've struck that appropriate balance of environmental stewardship. But I'm intrigued with, you know, there's some anecdotal stories out there within the industry of, you know, the recent situation that happened, I guess, about 2 weeks ago, which was unfortunate. But my takeaway from your testimony is, who's looking out for the little guy and who's going to protect the environment? And my point, and I share this with you because I want to ask for your opinion and looking at the regs, additional regs that were added in Colorado. It said that the Colorado Public Utility Commission, through authority from the state legislature, enacted regulations requiring operators of gathering lines in Class 1 to install pipeline markers at all crossing of public roads, highways, and railroads. It also imposes requirements for leakage surveys on Type B gathering lines in Class 2, 3, and 4 locations. Is that something you would advocate for?
I would certainly ask the commission to consider that. I mean, it may or may not be appropriate for Pennsylvania, but the fact that a state that has long experience with this industry has recently passed these regulations should suggest that there's something to be learned and something that needs to be done beyond what the federal government requires in order to protect citizens, particularly in rural areas, from the risks of pipeline development.
Wilson, any thoughts on your end?
I know that any agreement that's going to be signed by the folks that are in our group will have a stipulation in there that there would be pipeline markers, not just at road crossings, but at the edges of different fields or any place where it makes a turn. We don't want to find out by mistake that there was a pipeline somewheres. Also, talking to various people that are members of our group, a lot of them volunteer firemen. They have a problem in not knowing exactly where some of these, not just the pipeline facilities, but even the major drilling rigs are for a short period of time before everybody acquires that knowledge. The pipelines are, once they're in place and somebody goes out with a brush hog, those pipeline markers, if they happen to be seen, will be there. And if they don't happen to be seen, are probably not going to be there the next time the guy goes out with the brush hog, because he's just they're just not going to be seen, that's all. And so we think that markers is an absolute minimum.
Greg, what's been your experience? I think the vice chairman asked this question, but I'll take it one step further. You talked about this, your experience in these other jurisdictions where, you know, eminent domain is kind of used as a last resort. You're trying to negotiate with the landowner, and obviously you try to get as much, I'll say, public buy-in to an easement. And I said this to someone yesterday, I'm not a pipeline engineer, but I think you want a straight linear path when you're designing these. You don't want to build them like this. And what's been your experience in other jurisdictions? I mean,
well, we clearly do try to build them in a straight line, and there's reasons, there's mechanical reasons for it. A pipeline with a lot of bends and elbows is certainly subject to much more corrosion. No matter what you do in your pipeline to keep liquids out, whether the liquid be water, natural gas liquids that condensate out in the pipe, you do have an opportunity for liquids to build up, and it's an impact on every bend and turn that you have in your system. So it's a safety issue, first of all, and we do try to get them as straight as we can. It certainly is an economic issue as well. The amount of fuel we have to burn in a straight line relative to a line that has a bunch of dips and doodles in it is clearly less. When we run into the case where the landowner, there's probably several different circumstances that I can describe, but I think the common one that I would use to answer your question is, if we run into a landowner and there is just no way that he wants to settle with us, we definitely attempt to move the pipeline route. Sometimes that's a matter of going several landowners back. We will ask them if they would adjust their routing with us so that we can not necessarily have a very, very sharp bend in the line, but that we can create a more gradual bend in the line. We definitely try to work with that landowner. The case where we do go to eminent domain would be typically, and again, there's a variety of cases, but the typical case would be that we really don't have a choice at that point. The landowners behind us, for whatever reason, may not be willing or able to change. It may be that there's a structure that's involved. Again, a river would be a good example that we would prefer to keep away from. And we've just ended up in this situation where there's that piece of land. And in that case, we go through the eminent domain process where we have it.
And I respectfully submit to you, as in my prior life, I ran the Chamber of Commerce in Chester County, and I used to call those individuals citizens against virtually everything, so there's no negotiating with them. But my takeaway from the earlier presenters and your presentation, along with Chris, is the commitment to environmental stewardship, the investment back in the community, being cognizant of land rights, which are critically important in this country and obviously this Commonwealth. So I'm very encouraged by what I hear here today. And I think, Bill, we will strike that balance. I'm concerned, as the vice chairman alluded to earlier, there are those rogue actors out there. And I hope that, from whether it's the attorney general or whoever has that authority, that we're not hoodwinking landowners in the pursuit of a good land lease offer that might be made. So I thank you for your presentation here this afternoon, and I remain committed to working with any constituency on this issue. So thank you.
Commissioner Gardner.
Got my name there for a second. I'll be very brief, and I'd just like to thank each and every one of you for coming in tonight, this afternoon. I just want to say to Deborah that there are limitations to what the PUC can do. As I mentioned to the earlier panel, we're driven by the law, and what's on the books is what we ascribe to. But that being said, I'd like to mention that the PUC, Bureau of Transportation Safety, this weekend participated with the Pennsylvania State Police in Operation FracNet, and doing 72 hours over the weekend, some 3,500 vehicles, over-the-road vehicles, were pulled over in safety inspection. And that's one of the areas that many people do not appreciate, that that's also a role for the Public Utility Commission. So we do get out, and we are involved in many aspects overlapping utility responsibilities. And one of the things that has I've learned over the last couple of years is that we don't actually inspect an overwhelming majority number of the trucks that travel over the road. But as a result of concerns, especially with Marcellus Shell and the amount of truck traffic that that is generating, we've started to look at that a little more carefully. And some, over the weekend, 20%, almost 20% of the trucks that were inspected were taken out of service for safety reasons. Now, when I say that, I don't want to give the wrong impression. The majority of the trucks, the vast majority of the trucks, were taken out for safety concerns. It was not like these trucks and these vehicles were doing really egregious, unsafe activities. But things like where the truck is being inspected and you find overwear on the airline to the brake operation. So that truck will be taken out of service until that repair can be made, and typically that repair can be made on the side of the road, but as a statistic, is taken out of service. But one of the telling statistics from this inspection was that of the 3,500 vehicles that were pulled over, less than 4% of the operators, the drivers, were taken out of service. So by and large, even though we're seeing a lot of traffic associated with Marcellus Shell, the predominance of the operators out there on the road are operating in a very safe manner, and they have the appropriate credentials. As I said earlier, to the earlier testifier, I've looked at the gathering lines that are being built. I am hugely concerned, only from a statistical standpoint, and it is the sheer volume, the sheer mileage that is being constructed in Pennsylvania at this time. And because of that, I think that we need to have prudent oversight to ensure that it's being done in a way that the Pennsylvania population are ensured of the safety. Bill, I want to applaud you for coming down. I'm sure that the property owners is not one of the more richer organizations, and to have you come down and spend the day with us has to be make this a very important task. I heard your testimony. As you can be assured that as long as I am a sitting commissioner, you can give up my office a call and you will have our ear. To the rest of you, I thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. I echo those sentiments. I want to thank you all for coming. Individually, Mrs. Goldberg, I commend you for excellent testimony. It shows a lot of work and a lot of knowledge behind it, and we appreciate the efforts that you've made to be here to testify. Mr. Wilson, I too am impressed that a, quote, average citizen would take the time to do as much homework as you obviously have in this subject. I was up in Susquehanna County talking to citizens last week, and as with anything new, with large economic entities involved, there's a lot of concern. and we have a lot of public education to do. Not necessarily us, because, again, I'm not sure we have the jurisdiction. We are primarily concerned about public safety, if the legislature gives it to us. And your testimony will go a long way, I think, to helping us obtain that testimony. Mr. Bursaitis, I met you a few weeks ago, and you were quick to tell me that you fully supported our efforts to obtain adequate legislative authority to protect the public, and I commend you for that and for your testimony here today. And Mr. Zona, I see that your company is going to be applying for a certificate of public convenience.
Correct.
So we look forward to receiving that, and we will give it every consideration. I note that in your testimony you say that, as exemplified in DTE's history of development, Bluestone will make every reasonable effort to work with landowners and local authorities in the development of such infrastructure to reduce any potential impact to the environment or other use of lands, and generally to be a, quote, good neighbor, unquote, in the communities where we have assets and where we conduct business. Now, that's the right attitude.
Thank you.
Thank you all again. Judge Couturis, I think we are finished.
Well, there is an entry for closing remarks of the commissioners, and I have the feeling you just gave me yours.
I did, and I think my colleagues did too.
Thank you. We're adjourned.